Actually, I think it's only a week or two ago, Rabbi Willig's Haggadah Shel Pesach Am Mordechai came out. So I decided it's kedai to read. It is kedai to read. And I felt it's worth, I don't know if this is like a book review or this is insights or some combination thereof, but I want to just talk about some of the points that Rabbi Willig makes. Now, this Haggadah is a little bit unusual in that there are three parts to the Haggadah. He has what he calls the Chelek Dalo Dala, which Dalo is Rashi Tevis Droshos L'Shabbos Haggadah. And he then has a Haggadah. Then at the end, he has part of his Haggadah, he has a bunch of English essays, which he wrote for the Youngers of Riverdale Shul newsletter that connect to the Haggadah. In the end, he has a couple of English essays. This sefer is dedicated to his sister, Chavi Willig Levy, who was Nifteres Leil HaSeder, I think, last year or 2 years ago. And what's funny, Rabbi Willig does not make this point in the Hakdama, is Chavi Willig Levy, in one of her essays, she speaks about how, from when she was very young, she became obsessed with saying Tehillim, and her favorite Perek of Tehillim, and her favorite pasuk was Arumimcha Hashem ki dalisani, and dalisani comes from an expression of a dali, which is a pail, and the way you draw water in the pail is at first you go down and then it raises you up. And she spoke about how in her own life, at the moments when she was the most down, at some point she on her 30th birthday, it's like a friend told her, "You're never gonna get married," and she felt really down. And then she tried to get into some concert with a singer who she liked, and they're like, "Oh, all the seats are sold." And she's like, "Well, I don't need a seat. I'm in my wheelchair." They said, "No, you can't go." And then it turned out that right afterwards she met the man like Michael Levy she ended up marrying. So it's like that was her kidali sunny moment, like right when you feel very down, that's like what raised her up. So it's interesting that Rabbi Willig's Droshos L'Shabbos Haggadah Dalo is connected to what his sister wrote about Arumim Hashem Kidalisani, that right when you feel down, right when that's exactly when you move up, that can be the impetus for your growth. In Rabbi Willig's Sefer, so his Droshos L'Shabbos Haggadah, most of them have been published already. So I sort of knew a lot of them. They've been in his various farm, like the Chelek HaHalacha. What has not been published is the Chelek HaAgada. He would give the Halacha section before Mincha and the Agada section between Etchal Shuddos, basically. That's, I think, the way a lot of Rabbanim do Shabbos Haggadah. So the Chelek HaAgada has not been published, and I think that's worth focusing on. Each time he takes a point from the Halacha and he elaborates on the Agada that comes out of it. As a teeny bit of a historian, it bothers me that he doesn't give you the year when he is giving these, because someone could kind of try to, what are the issues that are bothering Rabbi Willig, which year, right? So it would be really interesting to know, because he uses his Shabbos Haggadah drasha to kind of talk about the things that are on his mind, the things that he feels the community should be thinking about, etc. So let's kind of go through some of his pieces. The first piece in the sefer, he talks about bedikas chametz. And he goes through like a halachic essay about the mitzvah of bedikas chametz, and when you do mechiras chametz, putting out the pieces of bread. That's like his first halachic essay. The Chelek HaAgada for that, he begins by talking about the Mishnah that begins Pesachim is Orla Arba Asa, Bokim Esa Chametz La'ar HaNer. And he quotes that Orla Arba Asa means the night before 14. The 14th year is the bar mitzvah, right, for a boy. Right, so Orla Barsa, the night or right before you become a chayiv and mitzvah, so then you have to be boken as a chametz. You have to look for the chametz, which represents the yetzer hara, and you do that Well, Arhaner, you have to shed light on the issues that are troubling in the community. So he speaks about how they say that Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, when he was the Rav in Toronto, his Balabatim didn't keep Shabbos. And one Shabbos Hagadol Drasha, he spoke about how you should smoke one cigarette fewer on Shabbos than you usually do. And like 30 years later, Rabbi Yaakov is speaking at some conference, and the guy comes over to him and says, "By the way, I now keep Shabbos," and it started with that drasha. So Rabbi Willig says, "These are the things I want to focus on for the community, and these are," and it's not clear what year he gave this, but the issue he focused on was he felt that there's a lack of bitachon in Hashem, that people earn money and they don't attribute their success to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He writes that people are not coming to shiurim enough. There's not enough kviyas yitzim Torah. And then he speaks a lot throughout these drushas about issues related to women. He speaks about tznius. Those are the three issues that he spoke about. And he writes in the middle, by the way, in Shnas Tavshin Pei Dalet, when he's coming out with this Haggadah, things have considerably improved in the community. Now he has like an Erni Morlin Kollel, and the Tznius has improved, and Bitachon has improved. So again, I'm not exactly sure when this was written, but that I think sheds light, to pardon the expression, on what he was thinking about at the beginning. The second piece in the Sefer is about medicine on Yontif, medicine on Pesach that might have some chametz in it. There's like a big issue. Everyone looks at super mekel, which is like good. That's like normal Judaism. Anything which is a pill, you don't have to worry about. I've gotten the shaypai 5 times in the last day. Basically, we assume that when chametz is nifsal, parcho kodem zmano, so it's not aser, but there's a din of achshavei, that if I decide to eat it, so then I am creating, I'm remaking its chametz status. And Moshe Feinstein writes, so there's no achshavei unless you're taking it l'shem achila. If I do it l'shem refuah, so that's not called achshavei. So therefore, every medicine that's a pill is mutar on Pesach. I don't know why. Like growing up, we used to have like this Rabbi Blumenkrantz book. They still have it that has like all these lists of medicines and stuff. I think it's becoming less and less popular now, which I think is a good thing because too many people would stop taking necessary medicines, necessary medicines, and they did it because of chametz, and chametz isn't really an issue. So the Chelek HaAgoda that he speaks about on in that year relates to chametz and sa'ar specifically. By the way, what's the translation of sa'ar? What? A leavening agent. Right, exactly. You see, you went to shiur and you learned beforehand. Most people translate sa'ar as yeast, which is absolutely wrong. Yeast is just a microorganism. Sa'ar is basically starter, though. One of my favorite shilas that I ever got as a rabbi, I got two great shilas from the same guy. So he was a Baal Tshuva. So his father gave him a gift of starter dough that was like some 30 whatever years old. The stuff is apparently gevaldic. He's a Baal Tshuva. The stuff had been chametz Pesach for like 30 years. Like it's really, really aser b'hanah. Is there any heter that because the guy wasn't frum, etc., the knas of chametz Pesach doesn't apply? That was one of the great shilas I got from this guy. The next great shiloh I got from the same guy is this guy graduated from Mount Sinai Jewish Center and became the head of a preschool out in actually Berkeley. The preschool has since gone defunct. So 1 year before Pesach, in order to get the preschoolers into Yetzias Mitzrayim, you decide to make bricks with them. Okay, like you make bricks, you take some straw usually, and you put dirt around it, and you leave it out in the sun, it becomes a brick. Right? You can't do that if it's cold in New York, but in Berkeley, you could do it. Amazing. So he didn't really have straw, but he found someone online was selling hay. And it was pretty cheap, so he bought the hay. So, by the way, hay is different than straw. Right? Hay is animal food. Hay often comes from oats. Okay. So this guy made bricks for an entire preschool. And all the bricks are made with oats, which means that they are now all chodetz. And these preschoolers distributed throughout the California area had real chametz with them. So I'm at Mechiras Chametz, and the guy calls me to ask, you're always like, all the rabbis would get together, Rabbi Willig, show up Mechiras Chametz, and like everyone would be getting shilohs. I'm like, okay, this is really a good one. Like, what do you do now? So Rabbi Willig is like, just tell him to sell the chametz on behalf of everybody. According to some poskim, you could say zachen l'adam shelo b'fanav on mechiras chametz, and like you're selling their chametz, it's like the best thing to do. You can't tell whatever 100 kids in the preschool, etc. So that was like the same guy gave me two awesome chametz shilas about the starter dough and about the hay. So back to Rabbi Willig's piece about medicines. So in that piece, Rabbi Willig speaks about sa'ar, which we know is a leavening agent. And sa'ar obviously represents the midah of gaiva because it makes dough rise. But sa'ar also has the koach lahachmitz acherem, to make other things into chametz, which means that sometimes you have, again, this is already why I would like to know which year Rabbi Willig is saying this in, but sometimes you have people who have a toxic ideology that is machmitz acherem. That's the way he presents it. And he starts to talk about postmodernism in this context, and he talks about how he quotes in the Sieve, which I think is a very good Vart. You know, in the Haggadah we say, V'hi sham d'la v'lanu, right? So, what is the V'hi sha'amda? So, it's usually understood that it's the promise that the Rabbanu Shalom made that we're going to leave Mitzrayim, Berchosh Gadol, and that promise is what kept us going, right, in every generation when the nations are trying to kill us. That's the standard understanding of V'hi sha'amda. The Netziv writes that V'hi sha'amda l'avosein v'lanu, the V'hi is the beginning of the Pasuk. The Rabbanu Shalom tells Avraham Avinu, Yadola teida ki ger yasaracha be'eretz lahem, meaning that the thing which is amda l'avosein v'lanu is the fact that we have been separate from all the nations of the world. We've been different from them. There has been anti-Semitism. And that is precisely what kept us going for all the years. The fact that we were not able to be me'urav with the nations. So Rabbi Willig then takes this and he says, well, you know, we have the sa'or, we have these like toxic ideologies, which can be machmitz acherim, and the thing that keeps us strong is, you know, v'hi sha'amda, the fact that we are separate and we distance ourselves from these ideologies, etc. Again, like I mentioned before, just curious about like when each thing is said. He then goes on to speak about how many people with these toxic ideologies, these are like his words, they're like tinokos shenishbu, so you have to have rachmanis on them. But then there are other people who aren't tinokos shenishbu, and those people we don't have rachmanis, misanefa Hashem, esna, etc. So again, my curiosity, you understand why it's coming there. Next piece that he has in the Sefer is about Psik Reisha. I don't remember if we discussed this piece in Shir or not. Basically, Rabbi Chanan Wasserman has an essay that's like Tzvei Dinim of Psik Reisha. There's Psik Reisha in the sense of it becomes Chada Maisa, that when I do action A and action B is inevitable, so it's as if I'm doing action B, because it's intertwined, it becomes chada maisa. Then there's another type of psik reisha, which is that you can't argue this is davar she'eino miskaven, because precisely since it happens all the time, so we know that you had kavana for this. So Rabbi Willig points out that the Rosh writes in Masechet Shabbos, the Rosh quotes that psik reisha d'lo nichole is mutar on Shabbos, but it's aser b'shaaris surim. What's the cheshbon? The cheshbon is that on Shabbos, psik reisha is on Shabbos we require malachas machshavas, so therefore you need a higher level of kavana. So psik reisha d'lo nichole, right, is going to be pater on Shabbos because you don't really have kavana for it. But b'sha'ari surim, it's going to be chayiv. Basically, the idea is that if psik resha b'sha'ari surim is based on the chada maisa idea, and by shari surim you don't need the higher level machshava, so it's going to be okay by sha'ari surim. But on right, no, it's going to be also by shari surim. But on Shabbos, it's going to be mutter. Because on Shas we have this higher requirement of machshava. This is Rabbi Willig in the Chelek HaHalacha of that piece. And then he goes on to talk about why he feels that cameras, security cameras, are mutter on Shabbos, right? I think most places on the planet now have security cameras. So what's the heter? Like you're walking past like a camera and it's recording you. And what?
It would do the same thing if you didn't walk past
So it
it.
would do the same thing, but if it does it on me, Rav Soloveitchik felt that I'm not allowed to pose for a picture on Shabbos because the Mishnah in Beitza writes that Echad Hevi Yisa'etzim, Echad Hevi Yisa'ar, whoever has a chelak in a melacha, it's considered like they're doing it. So if I walk past it, so then l'cha'ora I have a chelak in it. So the answer is it's a psik resha, d'lo nichalei. Now, this is a point I debated with Rabbi Willig for a while. Why is it lo nichalei? I want the cameras there because I'm part of the shul and I want to be protected. So Rabbi Willig says, no, it's lo nichalei because I only want the camera to photograph or to take a picture of like the robber, not the person like me. That's his argument, which, okay. But the point is that since he was talking about psik resha, and Rabbi Willig is a big fan that maybe even psik resha denichale is going to be mutter by Yisurim derabbanan. So therefore, he's making on security cameras. Once he's talking about security cameras, so the chelek ha'agada in that drasha is that the Mishnah writes that you should be histako b'gimel dvarim ha'elo v'yatzah bali de aveira da mashal mala mimcha ayin ro'a. Ezen shoma'as, ozen shoma'as, v'chom ha'asecha b'sefer nechtavim. Right, so he speaks about how ayin ra'ah is based on, the Medrash writes that had Reuven known that the Torah would speak about v'racha v'samach b'libo, that how what had right, one second, had Aaron known that the Torah would say v'racha v'samach b'libo. So therefore, he would have gone out, but Tupim Mecholos like made a very big deal. So that's in the positive sort of way. That's the Ayin Ro'ah. Of course, Ayin Ro'ah is also in the negative sort of way, which is he tells a story about Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, and Rabbi Yisrael Salanter is once riding with a wagon driver, and there's like some fruit with fields. With some fruit with fruits on the side, and the wagon driver is like, "You keep, I keep watching. I'm going to take the fruits, and if you see anybody coming, so say someone's coming, and then I'll run away." So whenever the guy goes to get the fruits, he's like, "No, someone's watching. Someone's watching." And the wagon driver's like, "What do you mean? There's no one here." So he's like, "No, Ayin Ra'ah, like the Ribbono Shel Olam sees everything. Ozen Shoma'as, Ribbono Shel Olam hears everything." Right? The idea is that even private conversations, even ideas that you don't say in public, you should realize that the Ribbono shel Olam hears it. And then, Kol Ma'asecha b'sefer nechtavim, he says that's the notion of security cameras, that we have to assume that everything that we're doing is going to be recorded. And when we recognize that everything that we're doing is being recorded, so therefore we should actually have fear of the Ribbono Shel Olam and not do things, just like the Gemara says that halavai we should fear the Ribbono Shel Olam as much as we fear people. People are always nervous that someone's going to see them. We should fear the Ribbono Shel Olam the same way. Shivisa Hashem l'negdi tamid. The Ribbono Shel Olam should be present in front of us all the time. If a person feels that, that's the first halach in Shochnach. So the last halach in Shochnach is Tov Lev Mishnah Tamid. You're always going to be happy if the Ribbono Shel Olam is always in front of you. Having fear of the Ribbono Shel Olam, recognizing that Kol Ma'asecha B'Sefer Nechtavim, so that's actually a good type of fear that you could have. And then Rabbi Willig begins to go on and he starts to talk again. I wonder what year this stuff is. He starts to talk about how people are nervous about missing out on stuff all the time. And that's why he says people drive and they're distracted and they're looking at their cell phones and they get into accidents. You should realize that there's always someone watching you. Just like if the police is going to catch you on the cell phone when you're driving, you should realize that like your Rebbeinu Shlomo is watching you when you're driving, you shouldn't use your cell phones. That was one of his ideas. Again, I get the impression that many of these drushes are relatively recent, but okay. The next piece that he has, again, you'll forgive me, I'm just going through this because this is what I've been reading the last day. The next piece that Rabbi Willig has is about Erev Pesach Shalias B'Shabbes and how you're Yotzei Shalash Shuddos. So he points out, he quotes in the Sefer Abu Yehoshua, that one of the Yesodos of Shalash Shuddos is to teach you not to fress too much. Don't eat such large meals on Shabbos, because if you eat such large meals, so you're going to not be able to have space in your stomach for Shalosh Shuddos, right? So he then goes on to talk about the idea of not engaging in gluttony and the idea of withstanding taivas in achila in particular. Shalosh Shuddos is the meal of Yaakov Avinu, right? Avram is Leil Shabbos, Yitzchak is Shabbos morning. Shalosh Shuddos is the meal of Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu is the one that says Yesh Li Kol, in the sense of that even if you don't have mamish everything, you feel like you do. That's the midah of being a mistapik b'muat. Whatever the Ribbono Shel Olam gives you should be happy with. And that was his drasha, again, based on Shalosh Shuddos on Erev Pesach Shechalias B'Shabbes. Then he speaks about Mechiras Chametz. Rabbi Willig, at the very end of his sefer, all of the Rabbanim in the New York area basically would go to Rabbi Willig for Mechiras Chametz. There's this guy, John Brown. He did it. It happens at the year of COVID. John Brown didn't come. John Brown always used to say at Mechiras Chametz that he feels the thing that keeps him alive is that he helps the Jewish community. He also gave him like a lot of parnassa because he was a real estate agent who sold homes in what's that part of Riverdale? The really wealthy part of Riverdale. So that was what John Brown did. He sold homes over there. We'd have to ask Tamar what part of Riverdale we're talking about. But Rabbi Willig has like these whole essays about how the goy has to understand that Mechiras Chametz is not a sham, etc. Then in the Chelak HaAgoda, he speaks about how there are three ways that we get rid of chametz. We get rid of chametz through mechira. We get rid of chametz through biur, and we get rid of chametz through bittul. Right? We have three methods. We sell the chametz. We destroy the chametz. And we do bittul, which is that we say that the chametz is null and void, it's ka'afra da'ara, etc. By the way, Rav Schechter points out that you should flip the order. You should say li batav laheve ka'afra da'ara, and then li batav laheve hefker afterwards. There's a machlokas Rashi and Tosfos about how bittul chametz works. What's the mechanism? So you can't, once you're mafker it, it's not yours, and then you can't say it should be kafir da'ara. And this P in this sefer, Rabbi Willig has some defense in the common minhag. I have to admit, I didn't understand what he's saying. I like Rav Schechter's approach. So there are three ways that we get rid of chametz: mechira, biur, and bittul. The Gemara in Brachos says La'olam yargas adam yetzer tov al yetzer hara, that you should have the yetzer tov overcome the yetzer hara. First, you try to do that with Torah. If that doesn't work, so then yikra kriya shma. If that doesn't work, so yizkor yom hamisa. Right? That's the Gemara. Right? You have Torah, then kriya shma, yizkor yom hamisa. Obviously, you can't start with remembering yom hamisa because it's like taking a medicine that's too powerful. Right? It's very scary and it will hurt you. So you start with Torah. The idea of Torah is that what Torah does is Torah takes whatever taivas we have in the world and it just channels them into an acceptable form. Right? When we learn Torah, we realize that, you know what? Like the Gemara writes in Chulin, there's no food that the Ribbono Shel Olam created which doesn't have a mutter way of doing it. So Mechiras Chametz is like Torah. which is that you're not really destroying it, you're going to get it back, but you still fulfill the mitzvah of Tashbisu Sar Mibateichem, right? We understand the guy's going to sell it back to you. It's how it happens. I like to do my own mechira, just because the reason we do like mechira, why you need Rabbi Willing to do mechira chametz, is because there's a question about which kinyanim work for a guy. Tyson and Daf Gimel in Kedushin discusses maybe Kinyan Sudr doesn't work for Goyim, maybe there's no Kinyan Aga for Goyim that Ksos discusses, maybe Kinyan Chatzar doesn't apply to Goyim, right? So we do all of these Kinyanim because we're not sure which one works. It happens as Machlokas Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish in Bava Metzia about whether we paskin Ma'os Konos or whether we paskin that Mashiach is Kona. And the Gemara Bechoril says whichever works for a Jew, the other one works for a Goy. So if you have Ma'os Konos Dvar Torah for a Jew, that means Mashiach is Kona for a Goy. If you have Mashiach is Kona for a Jew, so Ma'os is Konos by a Goy. Right? It's a chiastic structure. Now, what that means, by the way, is that if you want to do Mechiras Chametz without any pikpukim, so all you need is two kinyanim, Mashiach and Ma'os. The only thing is that works if I have one box of Chametz. And they sell it to Slobodan. Because then he does a mashiach, he takes the box into his house, and he also gives me, we do a down payment. He gives like $1 or something. And then after Yontiv, we say, do you want to buy the whole thing? Oh, it's going to cost you X number of dollars. He says, no, I don't want it. So then you give him the down payment back. And that's the way Mechir's comments works. So I could solve all the problems of Mechir. You don't need all the kinyan if you just have. The reason why you need all the kinyanim is because you're selling chametz like hundreds and thousands of people, and you can't do a mashiach on all the chametz in Riverdale, New York City, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I would like to do my own mechira. It happens those years when I was a show rabbi, I wouldn't do my own mechira just because I felt it's like not right. Now I'm selling everyone else's chametz, like through Rabbi Well, like I may as well do it myself. So the point is, there are three ways that we do tashbisu. Mechira, where we end up getting it back, that's like Torah. Kriya Shema is interesting because Kriya Shema, he quotes that the Gemara says that you have to say Kriya Shema with like Hislavos, right? In the sense of that you're supposed to say Kriya Shema b'kol, it says in Shulchan Aruch, and you're supposed to really get into saying Kriya Shema. It's supposed to be like a fire. So Kriya Shema represents Eish, right? It represents Bir Chameit in the sense of destroying Chameit. And Bittul Chameit is represented by the third element of Yizkor Yom HaMisa. Yizkor Yom HaMisa that we're going to, what's it called? You remember when you die, when the person becomes like Afar, so that makes you not do Averis. Again, based on these comments of the Zohar, that Chometz represents Yetzer Hara, and the Gemara it says that there are three ways of being Margas, Yetzer Tov, Yetzer Hara, so that could be, I actually thought this was like a nice piece of drush. There are three ways of getting rid of our chametz, and that could be a kiyum. Okay, next idea that Rabbi Wallach has in the Sefer. He speaks about mechiras chametz specifically with stocks. If you do the mechiras chametz, let's say in broyers, so it says that you are also selling stocks that might have chametz. So if I own stock in whatever the company, there is chametz in that company, especially if I own stock in, I don't know, I'll pick a company that deals with chametz. So then, does that mean I'm in violation by Rabbi Yimotzeh? So many poskim say yes. Rabbi Willig is very into no. And the cheshbin for the no is twofold. First of all, the bialos that I have on stock isn't really bialos. If I show up at AT&T with my shares, I can't say, okay, I'm going to be taking this refrigerator and all this stuff because my shares just entitle me to shares and profits. I don't own the actual thing. Moreover, Rabbi Willig speaks about Rav Moshe Feinstein has this in the Tshuvas that there's a kinyan, which is like a kinyan mamon hatzibor. It's not a kinyan of an individual. Right? The stock ownership is the pshat. I don't have genuine ownership of it. Right? I might own a portion, like as a chelak of the tzibor. There's like a new entity called tzibor, which is different than shutvin, and stock ownership falls into that connection. So then Rabbi Willig, based on this, he goes on to talk about how there's an inyan of the tzibor, and there's an inyan to be mishtatef with the tzibor, And there are certain times that the tzibur is doing stuff that you should not be mishtatef with, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And he gives a list. So again, my curiosity, I'm mentioning once more. Then Rabbi Willig talks about the next piece in the sefer is about how you kasher for Pesach, right? So there is kashering through libun, which involves esh, right? You burn it out. And then it's kashering through hagala that you purge something with hot water, and then that removes the bliya, so to speak, in the keli. That's how you get the chametz out. Hagala basically functions as a bittul form, that it comes out, then it's batal b'shishim, or it comes out, it becomes nice and tamlafgam, however it is. And libun functions as a form of biur, as a form of destroying the chametz. Rabbi Willig, in his Chelek HaAgada on this, speaks about libun involves eish. Most poskim assume that you mamish need fire for libun. We don't say kibbol kachpolto by libun. Let's say I have an oven that only gets to 400 degrees. Right? Someone just asked me the shaila 2 days ago. How do you do hechsher on a warming drawer? Like in, it's a shul, they have like a big warming drawer, and they have Yerushalmi kugels, which are made out of chametz, right? Because noodles are chametz. So how do you do hechsher on it? So not so simple, because what? To do hagol on these things is going to be very difficult. To pour boiling water, but you'll destroy it. And you can't do libun because there are two forms of libun. There's libun chamor, which is that you burn it to high enough temperature that the outermost layer will be destroyed, right? Or you burn it to the extent that it gets red hot. We assume that libun chamor is, let's say, 750, 800 Fahrenheit. Your self-cleaning oven counts as libun chamor. There's also a degree of libun called libun kal, which is the temperature shakash nisraf. Paper burns at Fahrenheit 451. I think there's a book called that. Kash nisraf is a little bit lower than that. Well, these warming drawers don't get near that temperature, so you don't have libun kal. You can't do hagala. It's not pasha how you kasher these things. You might have to just cover it. You can't kasher. But Rabbi Willig, in this context of talking about libun, he speaks about eish. He says that we all know there's like some tragedy, a big fire happened. There's a sakana. You have to be very careful with fire. No one should do bedikas chametz with a candle because the drapes might burn on fire, might catch on fire. You should use a flashlight. Then he speaks about how eish teaches us that you have to have hislavus lemitzvahs, just like you have to really be fiery and do mitzvahs with a lot of excitement. His argument is, I think this is actually very nice. He speaks about how when the women left Mitzrayim, there's like some song that they teach girls in Beis Yaakov's about this, that when we leave Mitzrayim, the men leave carrying dough on their shoulders, and the women leave, right, besupim, right, that they leave carrying tambourines. How did Miriam lead everyone, right, in singing Shir LaShem Ki Ga'o Ga'a? Right? How did she do that? Elamai, they carried tambourines out of Mitzrayim. So the idea is that they left Mitzrayim with like a certain hislavus that they have to recognize how wonderful things will be. And because of that hislavus that they had, that's why they weren't chotei be'egel. If you don't have excitement in mitzvos, you'll come to Averis. That's his piece over here. At the end of the Sefer, he has an English article about how there are two Jewish women that we have famous shiros from. We have the shira of Miriam, Shir LaShem Ki Ga'o Ga'a, and then we have the shira of Devorah. Right now, the shira of Miriam, you get an impression is like a chorus repeating the same thing again and again, Shir LaShem Ki Ga'o Ga'a, right, etc. The shira of Devorah goes on for a very long time. There's a lot. It's like the longest haftarah of the year, I think. No, and it's many different themes about, right, Biyad Ha'eshnav, right, Aim Sisra, looks Madur Echaru, Akrei Parmos, stuff, etc. That's the shira of Devorah. So he speaks about how there are two different models of Jewish women. There is the Miriam model. That Miriam, before she comes onto the scene, she is like Pua, right? That's who she is. And then Miriam is the one also who whispers, who tells Amram, take your wife back, and then Moshe Rabbeinu is born. So Miriam is like the mother figure in Klal Yisrael. Devorah represents the Jewish woman who's like the leader figure, who goes out into society and she's a leader and she et cetera. So what's interesting about Rabbi Willig's piece is if you'd ask me, I would say, okay, there are two models of Jewish women, right? That's what I would say. Rabbi Willig says, no, every woman who's a Devorah has to recognize the importance of being a Miriam also, and the importance of family. It's again, it's not that one is more true than the other. It's just a question of what you do with these two paradigms of female leadership. He speaks about how Devorah, her song is not like with emotion. Her song is like more thought, with forethought. Anochi Lashem, Anochi Ashira, etc. It's more of like a poem. You don't get the impression that people are dancing. It's like an intellectual type of leadership as opposed to emotional type of a woman's role in the emotions. Miriam represents the emotion, and Devorah represents the, what's it called, the intellectual leadership. And Rabbi Willig feels that you should put both these together, but he gets to that through Libun Hag'ola and Eish. Again, it's also interesting. The next piece that Rabbi Willig has relates to Heseba. We spoke about that already, whether Heseba is Zecher L'Neis or whether Heseba is what's it called? Heseba's Persume Nisa. And then he gets into the section about whether women should do Heseba. Nashim Didan are Chashuvos. Nonetheless, there's some Kol Saraviyah, right? We spoke about it's like the only joke in Shulchan Aruch, etc. So then Rabbi Willig, what's interesting, I never knew this. He has like a little essay about the Chafetz Chaim and his Chiddush of teaching Torah to women, and he quotes, and everybody knows that the Rambam's formulation is not that it's aser, it's just that tzivu chachamim. Like, wow! Like he says, I never knew Rabbi Willig said that. That's like, no, that's something that we spoke about in the shiur. He speaks about how halacha never changes, but society changes. Reb Shlomo Zalman has a tshuva, even though it says in the Gemara that a man's not supposed to walk achorei isha, but nonetheless, today that women are out there in society, so that iser, no longer applies. He then goes on and he says, again, he speaks about women a lot in these pieces. He says that the Dalet Kosos represents four different imahos. Kiddush represents Sarah. Kiddush is the beginning of Klal Yisrael. Sarah is the first mother who is Mekadesh Amo Yisrael. Rivka represents the second kos, which is the kos Sha'omrim Olav Haggadah. That kos is Maskel Beganus Umesayim B'Shevach. Rivka begins her life in the Beis Hoshel Lavan Ha'arami, and then she ends up being Rivka Imenu. Rachel is connected the third kos, connected Birchas Hamazon. Rachel is the mother of Yosef. Yosef is Hu HaMashbir, gives food to everybody. So Rachel's connected Yosef. And then Leah is connected the fourth kos of Hallel because she's the one who says, Hapam Odas Hashem, should I only thank the Ribbono Shel Olam one time? No, I'm going to name my kid Yehuda, and it will be a constant thanking of the Ribbono Shel Olam. So there are four kosos connected the four imahos. That's the way he presents it. Part of his conversation over here is he speaking about Heseba and Dalet Kosos. So he speaks about how bad getting drunk is. This is like a typical, this is like straight out of the Rabbi Willig playbook. And he says that today by B'nai Torah, not only do they get drunk, but their people are beginning to use drugs. And he speaks about how Professor Abraham Twersky, who like ran this clinic for those who are addicted, So he said that one time he's sitting at the Seder and he says, Avodim Hayinu, we used to be slaves. And there's a guy at the Seder says, no, you're saying you used to be slaves and you got out of it. I can never get out of it. When you're an addict, it's with you for life. And you can never leave it. Rabbi Willard goes on a little a piece later on in the Haggadah. He speaks in modern Hebrew. The term for addiction is hitmakrut. I never knew this until now. So the pasuk in the Tochacha says, "V'hismakartem sham lo'ayveichem," right? In other words, that you become like an addict, you become addicted to it. And he speaks about the importance of not getting involved in alcohol, et cetera, and how it could lead to terrible things. Again, like I'm just curious which year he gave which drasha. Again, next point. I don't know, maybe I spent a little too much time reading this Haggadah of the last day. But the next point that he makes is he talks about the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Like we spoke about, there's two elements of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. There's the mitzvah b'fnei atzmo, and there's Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim as a chelak of achilas matzah umorer. B'chol dar v'dar chayav adam liros es atzmo kihilu hu yatzah mimitzrayim. The Rambam's lashon is kihilu yatzah ata mishiba mitzrayim. That ata could be like what you were speaking about before. That's why we say halal in the sense of it's a spontaneous feeling that I have right now, even though usually bin polo yivcha al tismach. And Masa Yaday Tovim Bayam, and how can you say Shira? But if it's Shira B'Shas Hanes, you're allowed to say it. Right? So, one element he speaks about is the Dar Vadar in the sense of that I feel it right now. There are other times in Tanakh that we have Dar Vadar. Dar Vadar is in Megillas Esther, Hayamim Ha'elan is Karim B'Na'asim B'Chol Dar Vadar, and you have Mochamel Hashem Ba'amalek Midar Dar. Right? The basic idea of Dar V'Dar is that by telling stories, you create a certain hemshechiyot of generation to generation. He speaks about the importance of like maintaining family practice and handing stuff over in the Seder that have been part of your family's tradition. In your family's tradition, I'm sure when everyone opens the door at Shvo'ch HaMoscha, you talk about Gedaliyahu Aaron, who was killed in a pogrom. Gedaliyahu Aaron Rabinowitz is killed in a pogrom. That story of your grandfather, great grandfather, I guess, opening the door and like screaming Shvo'ch HaMoscha is like part of the family lore. And maintaining these parts of family lore are really important. Then Rabbi Willard goes on and he says, you know what? Everybody knows that horseradish is not maror. Because horseradish is sharp and it's not what's it called? It's not bitter, right? And horseradish was not in Eretz Yisrael at the time of the Mishnah, and it's a mistranslation. There's like an article in Gesher. So you should fulfill the mitzvah of maror by eating lettuce. And don't put horseradish on your maror because in the time of the Rishos will be mevatel, the time of the mitzvah. But Rabbi Willig says, finish maror and then eat a lot of horseradish because part of the Masorah is that you want to see the kids should see the father crying and the face gets all red. And that's part of the Masorah of Lil HaSeder. And that's the Dar Vadar element that is very important to convey. The Pasuk of Haggadah is the Higadol of Incha Bayom Hahu Lamar. The Aruch Hayim HaKadosh is bothered by the Kasha that we know Haggadah is a Lashon Az and Amir is a Lashon Rach, right? Ko Somar Beis Yaakov is Hagelo Bnei Yisrael. For Noshim you speak Balashon Rakov, for Noshim you speak right, Kosha Kegidin, right? So it's a little bit of a steer in the Pasuk, right? Vigat Vincha Bayom Hahu Lamar. Is it a Haggadah? Is it Lashon Kosher? Is it Amir? Is it Lashon Rach? So Rabbi Willard goes on again. This is part of his Hemshechiyot and the Dar Ladar. And how are you properly mechanech? So he says, well, it used to be that in the 19th century, the idea of chinuch was like you beat your kids up, you beat your students up to make sure that they learn. I remember actually in elementary school, the principal had in his office a big board hanging on the wall and said, the Board of Education. The idea was that if you misbehave, you get hit by. I don't think he ever used it. But there's a board of education, which would, right? That was one style of educating people. And there's another style that parents have, which basically is, let the kid do what the kid wants, etc. So what's the Torah attitudes? Rabbi Willig is like, well, the postmodern approach is that you do whatever you want and you let the kids kind of be free-range children, etc. The Torah's approach is that when they're kids, when they're young, you have to do Haggadah. You have to say no, like firmly. Later on, so sometimes kids act differently than the parents would like. So then there's a notion of amira and a notion of greater understanding, etc. But it has to begin with the takifos. Again, I'm not sure if this is correct, but I know it's a good piece of drush. Right? The difference between the higata and the lemar, I think that's really a nice thing. He speaks a little bit just in the Haggadah itself. He has about karpas. I'm almost done. So karpas, there's a machlokas in the poskim about whether karpas is a mitzvah to eat or is karpas only kedusha yishalo hatinokos. The Rambam holds that karpas is a full kezayis. Rambam holds that you dip it into charoses. It's a mitzvah b'achila. Most assume that karpas is a mitzvah only kedusha yishalo hatinokos. In certain families, one person makes the bracha for everybody. In other families, everyone makes the bar priya dama themselves. If it's a birchas hananen, everyone has to make it themselves. So if it's a birchas hamitzvah, I can be motzi you with the bracha. Kadesh Orchatz, Reb Shlomo Zalman pointed out that Orchatz is the only one, the Simani HaSeid, that has a vav. Kadesh Orchatz, then Karpas, Yachatz, Magid, there's no vav. Right? That means that the Netilas Yadayim of Orchatz, again, this is me, this is not Rabbi William, Netilas Yadayim of Orchatz, Reb Shlomo Zalman says, is L'shem Kedusha, all year long we don't wash for Dav Rosh HaTzibulo B'mashke, maybe we should, but most people don't. Leil HaSeder we do because it's Kadesh Orchatz, it's like an element of Kedusha. So Rabbi Willig says, part of the idea of Karpas as being Heker is that the Mishnah Berurah writes in one place that there's no Chi of Netilas Yadayim by Dav Rosh HaTzibulo B'mashke when you eat Pachas Mikzayis. Karpas are practices of Yipachas Mikzayis. We still don't see Netilas Yadayim. The Netziv says you should dafka do karpas with a fork. My mother was always into doing karpas with a fork because she felt that like it's all a bit yucky, that like you take a potato or whatever, a piece of celery and like and you're like okay, I hear why that could be a little bit yucky. But the notion of doing it in a way that you're washing the Netilas Yadayim Pachos mikzayis and using a fork, that just shows that this is kedei sheyishalo hatinokos. Then Rabbi Willig goes on how you should not use celery for karpas, because he says karpas should be a green vegetable, not a potato. Okay, fine. And don't use celery, he says, because people don't eat celery on their own; they only eat celery with other stuff. Das versteh ich nicht. I think people eat celery on its own all the time when you dip it in like a dip, right? You have celery on its own.
Is
Rabbi
that what he means?
Willig recommends using green pepper for karpas.
Is that what he means that you always dip it? So like once you eat that potato, not always. I mean, you always eat celery,
Maybe you
obviously
should
after you
use a
dip.
vegetable that you don't dafka dip, so use a green pepper. He doesn't say it that way. That would be interesting. Rabbi Teitz and Elizabeth used to dafka use a banana for karpas to show people that you make a bar priya dama on a banana, because people don't know that you make a bar priya dama. Honestly, if it'd be up to me, I would use a palm heart. Because the Gemara says that you make a shahako on Kura on palm hearts, but we now make a hadama on it because Kura in the Gemara is talking about the palm heart that's from a date palm tree that you plan on getting dates from. Today they have lots of fields in Brazil which are there just to grow palm hearts, so you should make hadama. So maybe to show people that palm heart is a hadama, you should use palm hearts for karpas. Maybe I should do that actually. It's not a bad idea. Just thought of it now. Okay. The idea of geula. So what does the word Geula mean? So Rav Soloveitchik, in one of his essays in Tradition 1977, speaks about how Geula means from the means going from the periphery of history to become central in history. Rabbi Willig points out that in Megillas Rus, the word Goel is someone who's Kona. Right? The Goel is going to be Kona Rus through Yibum, whatever it is. The notion is that we left Mitzrayim, there's Yitzia, that we're no longer owned by the Mitzrayim, as it were, but we're not the Kinyonim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu until we stand at Har Sinai. That's really the Geula. He speaks about, he speaks a lot about the amount of Marah that you have to eat, the amount of Matzah that you have to eat. etc. I think I've spoken enough already. We should have a Chag Hashanah Sameach. We should have a good Yontif. There's so much to say. I happen to be a fan, like I said before, about saying Divrei Torah at Hallel, not necessarily at Maggid. And I'm also a fan of, you have to prepare for the Seder. Like, don't go into it blind. So take something, read it. Don't just say Verlach. You should try to say ideas and generate, especially if you have an adult Seder where like everyone is an adult. It's an opportunity to speak about larger issues instead of just, Vehisha Amdo, whether anti-Semitism can be good for Jews or bad for Jews is a much larger issue than the Shisha Sidrei Mishnah, Chamisha Kum Sheitara, Aseres HaDibros HaShem Achad, and that are the things which is Amda Lavosenu V'lanu, etc. Like, certain Divrei Torah are nice, they're good, but we got to move past fourth grade. Okay, have a Chag Hashanah Sameach.